guys, and welcome back to another episode of Hashtag No Filter. This is actually going to be the last episode of the year. I had two others going live over the next couple weeks, but I'm postponing those, and those are going to go live in the new year. So this is going to be the last episode of the year, and I wanted to thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for being so supportive since I started this podcast back up. I absolutely love doing it, and I hope you enjoy it just as much. And I just really appreciate the support, whether you've listened to one episode, all of the episodes, whether you subscribe or just follow on social media or whatever you do, I appreciate it. So thank you. And I hope the end of the year for all of you is exactly as you want it to be. And I hope the start of 2023, I was about to say 2022, wow, of the start of 2023 is great, and I wish you all the best and just happy holidays, and thank you for being here. So today's episode, the last episode of 2022, is with none other than Carrie Colbert. She's a dear friend of mine. She's been on the podcast before, and this episode I absolutely love. I know I say I love every episode. I know. But this conversation was so great. If you look at the time, it's longer than my, you know, usual episodes because we couldn't stop talking, and there was so much I wanted to talk to her about and ask her about. She's a brilliant businesswoman. She has such a great story. She's just an incredible person and has a really, really great outlook on life. She's been through a lot, and I just appreciate her so much for coming back on and sharing a lot with you, and I think you're really going to enjoy this. So without further ado, let's get into the last episode of 2022 on Hashtag No Filter with Carrie Colbert.
Welcome back to the podcast, Carrie. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me, Julie.
Of course. So I will link to our previous episode, but it was so long ago. I actually don't even know when the exact date that it was, but it was when I was living in Houston. And you and I are like in such different places now than we were then, work-wise, you know, professionally, personally, everything. And it's just so funny. I was like,
geographically, like everything has changed. Like,
we've been through a lot together. Like, it's crazy. Like,
insane, actually.
Insane.
I was just telling you as we were catching up, I mean, photos pop up on my phone all the time. Oh, 5 years ago, you with my daughter at Christmas time, giving her a Hanukkah gift, you know, like all sorts of fun memories we've been through.
It's crazy.
It's really thick and thin for sure.
Thick and thin. So very excited to have you back. So I will link to the other episode, but even though you did kind of give a little bit of your background in that other episode, just in a nutshell, can you like just who you are, a brief background? I have a ton of questions for you, but who you are, what you do, and then I will get into everything else.
Great. Sure. Carrie Colbert from Houston. I am the founder and general partner of Curate Capital. We're a venture capital fund that invests in female-founded businesses. We invest in consumer brands by women for women. And I've been doing that for a few years, which we can talk more about. But I'm also the mom to two young kids. My daughter Elle is 5, and my son Luke will be 2 on New Year's Eve.
Crazy that they're both 5 and 2. I don't know when that happened.
It's crazy that I'm a mom and that I have kids, right? Like you and I knew each other and worked together like in my pre-kid life, and I never expected to have kids. So the whole thing's a bit crazy.
It's all crazy, but it's all very good. So, okay, there's a lot I want to talk about, but first, career-wise. So you went from working in oil and gas a while ago in a very, very male-dominated industry. Then you transitioned to full-time influencer blogger. Then you transitioned to, of course, Curate Capital, which invest in female-founded businesses. So it's a broad question, but can you kind of walk us through like first what it was like being in that male-dominated world, then like what inspired you to go full-time, and then kind of what inspired Curate Capital?
Sure. Yeah, it's been a weird circuitous path, if you will. It's not a straight line for sure. It's been a windy one, but I'm certainly in my sweet spot professionally now. So I'll back way the hell up and say, you know, I grew up kind of always doing things in a male-oriented world. So like I played golf competitively growing up, and I was in a small town, so it was mainly men who played golf at that golf course. I worked at the golf course, and then I studied petroleum engineering in undergrad, and I think I was maybe one of only a couple of women in my class, and then went to work in the oil and gas industry. And so it all may seem very strange and random, but I'm a big believer that like you can take something from everything. You can learn something from everything. And the fact of the matter is that my early career decisions were just dictated by practical, pragmatic reasons, right? Like I was the first in my family to go to college. So my thought process was, okay, what can I study where I can get good scholarships and get a good job, right? And so then I got a good job, whatever that means. And you know, moved to Houston, and now I've lived in Houston for over 20 years. And you know, really, I was never necessarily passionate about the oil and gas industry, although I had a very successful, you know, almost 20-year career. But even though I wasn't passionate about the industry or even some of my roles within the industry, there was so much to be learned. And so I was fortunate that the majority of my career was spent at a privately held company that was run in an entrepreneurial manner. And so that's where I really caught the entrepreneurial bug and learned so many great lessons from the founder and leadership there. So while I was there, I also got my MBA. And like I said, learned so much, even though it's an industry that didn't necessarily resonate with me and was, you know, somewhat still kind of old school. Mm-hmm. The founder ran it in such a progressive way in that he gave everyone equity to some extent. We had the option to purchase additional equity with our own money. And he really was a master of aligning incentives within an organization. And by that, I mean, setting things up so that everyone's working towards the same goal. Mm-hmm. And so we had this cheesy phrase for one of our core values. And that was that when Hillcorp wins, we all win. Mm-hmm. And as cheesy as it sounds, it was really, really true. And so by, you know, having an open book management style of leadership, by sharing everything with everyone, people can really understand like, hey, this is how my actions impact the bottom line. And then that bottom line, when it's good, that impacts me personally. And so it was a really great place to kind of learn some of those concepts. And ultimately, having ownership was life-changing for me. And so that allowed me to, quote unquote, you know, retire early right. from, you know, a career that had served me well. And at the same time, though, I was ready to step away and figure out something that resonated with me more personally. Now, I didn't really know what I was going to do next. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is a lot of opportunities presented themselves. On the outside, I kind of stumbled into being an influencer mm-hmm. online. But behind the scenes, more was going on. The influencer Instagram thing is relevant because it actually led me to start connecting with brands I like. And I ultimately started investing my own money into those sorts of brands. The first of which was a company called Packed Party out of Austin, which you know really well. And other smaller ones as well. But basically over a period of about 5 years behind the scenes, I was investing my own money into female founded businesses. And really three important things happened. One, I was having great fun. And I never would have said mm-hmm. I was having fun in my professional life before. Mm-hmm. I was grateful for it, enjoyed it, but fun probably wasn't a word. So right. I was having fun. I was having great results. I mean, the companies were growing. I was seeing the returns that one would want. But then probably more importantly, the third thing was that I was having, you know, great deal flow. And so what that means is that so many companies were approaching me and I was seeing so many deals in the market that I realized the opportunity set to invest in these sorts of businesses was well beyond and bigger than what I could do on my own. So I somewhat naively said, you know what, we'll start a venture capital fund. Start a venture capital fund. It'll be fun, they said, right?
No big deal.
So very naively decided to launch a VC fund. And, you know, I had worked in finance and I had, you know, been in business. So I had some inkling of what I was doing, but it was a steep learning curve. So if you think about venture capital investing, just to kind of break it down, one important part and maybe the most important part is that I had the deal flow. Like I said, I was seeing these investment opportunities. I had that. The part of the business that I had no clue about was fundraising. So how to raise mm-hmm. money and then fund administration. Like what do you do once you get all these investors and how do right. you, you know, manage that? So both very serious, big topics that I had a lot to learn about. So all that to say, had the idea for Curate Capital in December 2019. Mm-hmm. Actually, November 2019, that's when our mutual friend Justin did all the branding for right. us, came up with the name. Yeah. And then in December, our legal documents were drawn up. And really in early 2020, we were getting ready to really launch. And then the world changed. And as a first-time fund manager, I couldn't, you know, in good faith go say, hey, give me money with so much uncertainty mm-hmm. in the world. So really, that delayed us for about a year. So we really just launched in 2021, set out with a goal to raise $10 million. We actually closed at $15 million. And so far we've already invested in over a dozen businesses. Believe it or not, we'll be launching our second fund in 2023, probably that's a much bigger number.
Exciting.
But yeah, And so, and there's lots more we can dive into about, you know, the fundraising and kind of who we are and what we're about. But it's just really cool to get to work with so many incredible women building outstanding businesses and get to be a big or even small part of that.
It's amazing. Congratulations. Now, I know how crazy busy you are and how amazing it's been, but it's hard. I mean, it's hard work. Like, you work a lot.
Yeah. And hopefully we're getting to a point where there will be some economies of scale and, you know, starting to get some more support systems in place. Right. But, you know, truly starting a fund is like starting a business. Yeah. I mean, it was, everything was on me, literally every decision, every fundraising dollar had to go through me. Right. And there were a lot of sleepless nights. And, you know, I just told you the headline that, oh, we surpassed our goal by 50%. Right. And it sounds like it was all easy and everything. But I mean, I can remember sitting on my closet floor crying, going, you know, what have I got myself into? Like, are we even going to be able to fulfill our commitments? Like, I'd stepped out and, you know, it's really, really scary, you know, and because you're dealing with that.
Do you have a, I just cut you off. Sorry. Do you have a team now, or how many people do you work with, like within Curie Capital?
So it's a weird, it's a weird thing how venture fund economics work. Okay. So like, here's like a simple breakdown primer. Yeah. So venture capital funds, traditionally, the way that it works, that you run them off management fees. So what that means is, like, if I raise $15 million, management fees are typically about 2%.
Got it.
So that means 2% of 15 million is a, I'll just do the math. I feel like we're on Trading Secrets, like breaking down the numbers. Would we make your friend Jason proud? Okay. So 2% of $15 million is essentially, rough numbers, 300 grand a year. Mm-hmm. So you're like, oh, well, that's great. That's what I have to pay myself. And our family has to live on, and I have to pay most all of the bills for the fund. And I have to, you know, the list goes on and on out of what comes out, like basically everything. I have to pay, you know, the bills for everything we're doing for the business. Oh, and we have to support our little family off that 300 grand. So as you can see, it doesn't allow to really like build out a full team internally. Those things will come as we raise a second fund and a third fund, and the funds get bigger. So that's kind of the way it works. I don't love the model. It's unfortunate. I can see why people don't start venture capital funds from scratch, because it's very tough. Because
is that across the board how it is?
Yeah. Now, of course, like when they're on their, you know, 20th fund and they're raising a $1 billion fund, that's when obviously 2% of a billion, I can't even do the math in my head right now, but that's when you start. I mean, it's incredible amounts of money. Right. That's when you see all the kind of over the top, you know, teams and all, and that's great. You know, I don't know that I ever have aspirations for that big, but
so then how does the management fee work as you go on though? Like, so you raise this second fund, and then is that management fee, you're like, cause you're still managing the money, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah. So that 2% traditionally, that'll like stay with that fund for the, like, so I'll have that for like the next 8 or 10 years, as long as that first fund goes on. Then if I raise another fund that's a bigger fund, we'll then take 2% of that. And so then you start to get some breathing room. But it's, you know, throwing a pandemic, an unexpected baby. And, you know, I'm about three years into this, and, you know, it's all been on me, more or less. So I'll close that loop with one more comment. So what that's made me do is get really creative about, you know, adding additional resources. So it's, you know, obviously it's some contract people, but also when we were doing our fundraising, I looked for investors that maybe had expertise or skills that they could contribute. You know, since they're investors, they want to see our company succeed. Mm-hmm. So I look to align myself with other companies and people that brought things to the table. So, like, for instance, there's an influencer agency here in town called Trend, mm-hmm. and they and its investors invested quite a bit in Curate. And I like that because they obviously have the social media marketing expertise. Mm-hmm. They have the influencer marketing piece, so they can support me in those ways. And then there's another company called Soft Tech that invested. And well, they obviously have the tech expertise. So if we're, you know, investing in companies that have, you know, a big tech component, they can take a look at that and, you know, vet it and help them improve their back end and all that sort of stuff. So I've had to get creative with aligning myself with people that can be partners and contribute things without actually like hiring a team and building it out.
Smart. That's a strategic way to do it. I used to work with Carrie when she was in her influencer blogger days. We would have late night photo shoots, all day work session.
Let's just be real. You basically ran my life and my business.
I loved it. Kept me those from, were good times. I mean, crazy times for both of us, but good times. Good. Okay. You had mentioned influencer agency. I wanted to ask, and then we'll go back to some Curie Capital things, but you mentioned influencer. So you were, I mean, I would still consider you an influencer on some level. Like, you do influence.
Well, thanks. So yeah, the cool thing is that I'll say about that is I don't have the biggest following in the world. It's been flat and stagnant for years, but I've got an engaged, loyal, long time following. Oh, yeah. And what that has meant is not only has it helped me connect with brands that I want to invest in, but it's also was a big source of my investors that invested in us. And backing up for a moment, like as I started fundraising, in my naivety, I thought, well, I'll go to John or Joe or Bill or Bob for my oil and gas days. I'm sure they'll invest with me and we'll just raise $10 million really quick and easily. Well, reality check, that's not what happened. Mm. But what really happened was even, you know, really a better story to tell and a better reality, because as I began talking about Curate Capital and about the companies we were investing in, women got it right away. Mm-hmm. So followers online would be like, oh, I know that company, or oh, I'm a customer of that, or wow, I've been looking for a solution to that problem, mm-hmm. or whatever. And women want to support other women. And so, I mean, I literally had women who I had never met reach out over Instagram and say, yeah, I'm in, sign me wow. up for 250,000. Like, where do I send my money? Like, where do, how do I do this? And yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's, but so you're not blogging. I mean, I think I looked on your site the other day. You're not blogging necessarily.
No, actually, I've been meaning to ask you, do you even know what my login is anymore? If we want to go that route, I don't know my own login.
I do probably Sorry. Have all okay. your stuff in my Evernote. So maybe good, we'll good. Start yeah. blogging again.
You know, we'll there's something to be done there for sure.
So,
but.
So you're not obviously like, you know, influencer, whatever that word, we, you know, we hate that term. We love that term, whatever. But what would you say, like, noticing from when you were a true like full-time influencer to now, you know, you work with some influencers, you know, like what's the biggest difference? I mean, I know the industry changes every day, but like, what's the biggest difference?
Totally. Well, I think, you know, we're thinking back, I don't know, 5, 7, 8 years ago when, you know, I was doing it and when we were working together, I think those are in the early days of influencer marketing. Mm-hmm. And people were okay with brand awareness, right? They were just glad to have someone create pretty content for them. Yep. And I got to say, that's where I shined at the time. One, I was good at still photos, not good at video. And I was good at brand awareness, not conversion.
Oh, the ideas you had were insane. Amazing.
Well, I just like thinking of the concepts yeah. and the, you know, whatever. But, you know, I think things really changed where people see through those kind of just brand awareness, you know, paid partnerships, and it's more now about converting. And, right. you know, I told you that I wasn't good or skilled at fundraising. And that's probably the same with influencer marketing. Like, I'm not a salesperson. Like, right. okay, if I post a picture with this dress on and someone asks me for the dress link, sure, I'll send it to them. I might post it for everyone, but I'm not going to be, you need to buy this. Right. You need this. You need that. Like, that's just not my personality, right. nor is it my strong suit.
Right.
So, I mean, hey, you know, I did okay during those days, but now I'm really, really impressed with the women that invested with Curate, the influencers that I get to work with from that perspective. The amount of product these women can move, the conversion rate they can generate is really so impactful, you know. And what's really cool about, you know, influencers investing into a VC fund like Curate Capital is they are able to create a long-term, you know, financial, you know, picture for themselves that doesn't require them to stay on that treadmill of hawking products every day, right? Right. Like, that's great now, but it allows them to maybe diversify. And they understand that from the perspective that they've seen brands, you know, launch out of nowhere, really lean into influencer marketing, and then ultimately have that big exit, those big paydays. Right. And they're left wondering like, hey, how do I get a piece of that? And so this is one way to do that. And I think right. we're seeing that more and more. So on the influencer side, I think brands want to work with influencers that actually convert now, yes, you know, the days yes. of like, just sharing pretty pictures to spread brand awareness. Those are really, so they want to work with influencers that convert. But then I think influencers are realizing that yes, they've made a lot of money with, you know, affiliate marketing or their commissions or even their sponsor post fees. Mm-hmm. But now influencers are seeing, hey, there's possibilities here to have equity in companies. Like, how do I do that? Right. How do I do that?
Right. It's so interesting. It really has. It's true. Brand exposure was everything. That was like,
yeah.
Like on the contracts, that's what they wanted. But you were really good about, because how you're saying you're like not a salesperson, you would even write blog articles, or we would work on them together, what, where you were like, I'm actually telling you not to shop the Nordstrom anniversary sale unless there's something you need. Like, you did not push product. Like, you didn't push.
Yeah.
It wasn't you. That wasn't what you were doing.
Yeah.
So pretty
well,
cool.
I guess, and maybe that plays into what I'm doing now. I mean, I want people to use their money responsibly. And yes. I sometimes the, you know, internet and social media culture of today encourages a lot of like excessive spending in my estimation. Now, spend your money and support the brands I've invested in. Okay. Yes. Like I appreciate that.
Obviously.
Beyond that. Yeah.
But beyond that,
that, control your spending. Save up so you can invest.
In the, exactly. Yeah. So in terms of the brands in which you invest, what do you look for? Like what are the top things you look for in a brand that you're going to invest in? Or a person.
Yeah, great question. Great question. Because it's so much more has to align. Like I was just talking with someone over lunch, like so many stars have to align to make an actual investment take place. You know, that has to be the right timing, the right stage. Like maybe I can't be in a competing brand. This is like so many esoteric things, like all have to work out for a brand, or for an investment to take place. It's not as simple as, hey, I like you and I like your brand, you know? So I think that's something that people have to realize is that it's not, you know, just do I like you and your company, but hey, are you at the right stage where my check size can get me the right amount of equity I want, all that. So backing off of all those logistics, I mean, everyone's says this, but it's true. I mean, it's founder first, right? Like you want to invest in the person, you want to believe in them, their capabilities and their vision for their company. But beyond that, I think it's super important. I mean, we do a lot of due diligence and that just means kind of peeking behind the curtain, so to speak. You know, a 30-minute, you know, pitch conversation is great, a pitch deck, all that. But then it's a, you know, fiduciary responsibility I have to investigate like how their numbers, the accounting, you know, all the behind the scenes stuff, you know, where the rubber hits the road, so to speak, you know, look at, you know, really how they're performing, not just kind of the best foot forward that you can put in a, you know, quick meeting or in a presentation. So we do a really thorough due diligence process, you know, to kind of investigate the company, if you will. And then, for us now, so I talk about founder, you know, you got to do your due diligence to make sure that's going to be a good, solid investment. But for us, we're really interested in consumer brands that will resonate with our investors and our influencers and their following. So that's one really cool thing about Curate Capital. And I wish I can claim this being like some magical, you know, idea that I had. But as I mentioned earlier, it was kind of like when my first idea didn't work out, and that was going to my old colleagues from oil and gas and being like, give me money. You know, that really didn't pan out as much as I thought, but really it was women who showed up. And so now we've got this incredible investor base that's over 80% women, over 30% of our capital came from influencers. And we've just got this really engaged community that wants to support the brands we invest in. So not just our investors, but like anyone can be a part of our community. Right. By that, you know, just you can follow us on social media or sign up for our email newsletter. And, you know, we've often got discount codes for our brands. Yeah. We've got, you know, kind of early access to some things. And, you know, I just think there's a big opportunity to think about this from a community standpoint. So we'll be doing things in the future, like conferences and events, because it's not just about give me your money and let me invest it. It's getting to know the founders. It's getting to know the investors. It's getting to know our customers and supporters and just so many things we can all learn and gain from one another. It's not a one-way street. It's a really symbiotic relationship.
It's in, yeah, it,
in
it's
this
like
ecosystem
it's not,
of women.
For someone who, me, who is not savvy in the hedge fund investing fund space at all, I feel like we used to make fun of me. Like, you're like my smartest friend. Like, Carrie's just like brilliant.
That's very nice.
But it's approachable. And I think we talked about this like a while ago on maybe the podcast. Like, your Curate Capital feels approachable and you can tell there's heart and soul in it. It's not just for the dollars. It's not just for the quick little transaction. Like,
right.
It's real. It's the real deal. It's very inspiring.
Well, I think that became kind of a secondary mission of mine as I was fundraising, and that was educating people, because, you know, it's this belief that knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. And with venture capital, it's kind of been like just a select few have held the knowledge for a long time. So they've held the power for a long time. And quite frankly, it's not that complicated, but we just don't talk about it openly. Right. Everyone uses these terms and jargon that make it feel very unapproachable. And so, you know, I'm on a mission to just share, like, what is venture capital? How does it work? Who can invest in venture capital? Okay, you say only accredited investors can. Well, what does that mean?
Right.
Because, you know, at that point, when people have the information and the knowledge, then they can make their own decisions. Mm-hmm. And it may not be for everyone. You know, there's certain risk factors, there's certain timelines, there's, you know, certain things that may not appeal to everyone. And that's totally okay. But I think people should at least be informed to make their own decisions.
No, you should be a professor on the side because you have so much time.
Thank you. We will. actually with social media be doing more educational components in the new year, just because I think that's so important. I mean, it's kind of boring. It can be kind of boring and dry content. We'll try to make it fun.
No, but, you make it fun.
I want people to understand like how it works. It doesn't have to be shrouded in secrecy and, you know, obscurity. We can just talk about it, like normal friends and people like,
approachable. Yeah. No, I love that. So one more question about kind of Curate Capital, then I want to get into something else. What would you say is like a common thread among all your female entrepreneurs that you invest in? Like what's one common thread that you see?
Yeah, I think they're all very gritty and persistent. Mm-hmm. You know, the stat in the US still is that female founders get less than 2% of venture capital dollars in the US. Mm. So even though they start almost half of the business in the US, they get only about 2% of the VC dollars.
Wow.
And at the same time, they continue to outperform. There's study after studies that show that, you know, founding teams, either all female or mixed, but the teams that include women in leadership deliver higher returns than all male teams. So it really creates this incredible investment opportunity where they're underfunded, but yet they're overperforming. So just a little bit of capital and a little bit of expertise and guidance can go a long way. But back into your question, I think that's really the common denominator. Yeah. These women have had to fight really hard for every piece of, you know, every piece of capital they've gotten, every piece of progress they've had. So when they get investment dollars, they're much more disciplined and scrupulous with how they spend it. And it can really turn it into something big.
Wow. That's amazing. It's amazing. Well, so you're obviously very busy, you know, very, very busy. And you have two little ones. So I hate this question, but I'm going to ask anyway. How do you do it all? I mean, obviously I know you have help in areas, I'm sure, but how do you do it all? I mean, I remember sitting with you at Starbucks in River Oaks, and I think your water broke with Elle that day, that morning. And we thought you spilled on yourself or something.
Julie, I was just telling Elle this story. I was at dinner with a friend. We were at Escalante's on Monday night, by the way. And we were dinner with a girlfriend, and Elle was there. And I had asked my friend about, she has three kids, and we were talking about when her kids were born. Elle said, well, what's the story of when I was born? Oh. And so we were telling her about it. And she's like, what does that mean? Your water broke. And
no.
I'm like, I was with Aunt Juju at Starbucks. And yes, my kids called Julie Juju.
Yes.
That's how close we are.
It's true.
So no, it's true. Like we went from no kids to, you know, now here I am with two kids, which is weird.
You didn't even know if you'd have kids.
No, did not think that. And then two surprises in my 40s. So
women,
beware.
Wait, Elle was born. How old were you when Elle was born?
40.
You were 40 when she was born. Right. So guys, if you're 36, I'm 36 turning 37. Like don't give up.
Well, home. And that was the first one. So then another surprise happened and I had Luke. I was almost 44 when he was born.
I mean, wild.
Yeah. And so I hesitate to say that because I know so many women struggle with fertility issues.
I know,
and all
I feel terrible even saying it. When
I don't make it sound trite or trivial, but you know, with some people it happens.
Yeah.
I guess I'm a big believer that, you know, things happen when they're supposed to, you know, to some extent. Not to give platitudes, but no, they're definitely the biggest blessings I never knew I needed. You know, I had a good life before. I mean, you know, some of my ups and downs and trials and all that, but I'll say that it was a pretty self-centered life. And I mean, I didn't really have anyone else to live for. I mean, and I'm not saying that, you know, childless people are all self-centered. I'm just saying that I was going through a time when it was like, I had a lot of disposable income. I was spending on myself. I was going on trips. I was doing all those things, and that's fine. And, you know, you can be a very fulfilled person, you know, without children. I do not want to mince words about that. I could have had a good life and very fulfilling. You know, you can give and do and, you know, do a lot of things that bring fulfillment outside of children. For me, though, it's been an amazing thing because it makes me want to be a better person. Like I have to, you know, address my own crap because I don't want to, you know, hinder them and
put it on their
development,
right,
and all that.
No,
yeah.
it's true.
Logistically definitely takes a lot of help behind the scenes, whether that's a supportive partner or a nanny or, you know, whatever.
Right.
It's a lot of work.
Well, and I think, is there part of you that's almost happy that you didn't have kids until now? Because you got to do all the traveling and do
100%. And I, you know, I was very career oriented.
Yep.
Did well financially. So if I would have had kids in my 20s, I would not have been ready, whether financially, financially, emotionally, relationally, it would not have been a good fit. And still, it's tough. Like, still, I'm like, I'm supposed to have all my crap together. Like, I'm supposed to be the mature one, the grown up. Like, how did this happen? But definitely better now than then. By the way, I think on a recent podcast, you were saying, you know, talking about being a, you know, an ancient mother, if you were to have kids, you're like, if I had kids and I was 40, I would be 58 when they graduate from high school. And I think I text you, I was like, bite your tongue. That is me. Like for my oldest one. So Elle was born when I was 40. I'll be 58 when she graduates high school. Luke, I'll be, I don't even know, 4 years older. So
60 yeah. something. 60 62. Something. But you know what? Yeah. It's great. It's awesome.
They're either going to keep me young or not. My grave. We're not sure which
we
way
get our grays colored often.
I'm overdue, but thankfully, Zoom has some filter.
It's disgusting over here. So you're, you know, obviously life's not perfect. It's never perfect. No. And you've, like you just said, you've had your ups and downs. We've experienced our ups and downs together. Some of the downs, we've both been very down. And now, like, of course, things still aren't perfect, but you have these two beautiful kids, you had, you know, a thriving business. And I know behind the scenes, it's nothing's ever perfect, but what would you just say to someone who's kind of going through a bit of like a time that like you and I have both been in before, where it's just like kind of not a great time?
Yeah, I think the thing that helps me most is to remember that it'll pass, right? Like life, I think of life in seasons. And to be frank, I've been in a tough season for, you know, 2, 3, 4, well, how many years do we want to count? But I mean, that's not to say there hasn't been joy and blessings in the midst of all that, but there are seasons of life. And some are going to be seasons where you hunker down, you tighten, you know, things up, you know, I don't know, like when, you know, you pull back or whatever, then there are going to be seasons where you're just out there, you're doing things, having fun, but it ebbs and flows. I mean, nothing stays the same and there's good within all of it. Yeah. I mean, definitely feel that. I mean, I think I, in my naive younger years, were waiting to arrive, you know, where things will be smooth or perfect. I don't think that ever happens.
It's never.
I think we just kind of embrace the chaos and, you know, find the beauty within it all. And it sounds like super cheesy, even as I'm saying it, but that's like how we survive.
It's true. Right? And Megan Silanoff, obviously, you know, very well, Megan was on the podcast recently and she said something like, because I said, you know, now you're in this amazing relationship, blah, 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 blah. And she's like, it's really just trading one set of problems for another, right? Like you don't necessarily have maybe those problems. It's just, life's never going to be perfect. No one ever is going to just, it's never going to be perfect. Or if it is quote perfect, it's like a few days. That's something.
Right. Happens. And I think you and I have talked about this in the past. I don't think on the podcast, but I mean, the grass is not always greener, right? Like we jokingly say, you know, oh gosh, you don't have any kids. Like, and I had Luke keep beaming up all night, but then there are pluses and minuses to everything in life. And you just have to get out of that comparison game because like your life is yours. You're in full control to make it what you want to be. Yep. And it's yours. I mean, it doesn't do any good to compare to other people because their background, their circumstances, all different. You just cannot compare. All you can do is the best you can do. And go
motivational speaker. So now before we wrap up, I have my little rapid fire round, but I feel like that was such a great
Oh gosh, you always scare me.
I know. I think they're pretty easy questions today. Let's see though. Maybe not. Okay. First one. If you could have a pause button, some of these I've asked before. If you could have a pause button, a rewind button, or a fast forward button on life and you had to pick one, which would it be?
Can you see, I'm not good at rapid fire because I overthink things.
I know.
I want to fast forward certain aspects, rewind certain. Yeah. Can we like pick and choose aspects of it?
Yeah. Do you want all three?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I want it all.
You want it all. I can appreciate that. Forgiveness or permission?
What do you mean?
Like, you know how they say, like, is it better to ask for forgiveness or permission? Like if you're going to do something that you don't. You're a rule follower.
Yeah, I just don't like wronging people and then you gotta dig yourself.
You're a good person.
Let's just be upfront about it. Like if there's
talk about it. Just throw it out there. Guilty pleasure.
I am so lame these days.
Do you not like know like crazy TV or like spa days?
For sure. I love The Bachelor. I love a good massage. I'm trying to think the things I do for myself. They're few and far between, but yeah, a good massage, little Bachelor. I don't do a lot of other reality TV.
Yeah.
I'm so like I'm so time constrained right now that it's all about efficiency, right? Yeah. Like once the kids are in bed, I just want to go to sleep because I'm going to have to get up the next morning early and do it all again. Like, there's just not a lot of
time for guilty pleasures.
Right. But again, like there will be seasons where there are. Yeah. Right now is a season with very little margin between business and young kids, all that. but other seasons will look different. So,
yeah, so true. I love that. What was your, I love this question. What was your last Google search?
Oh Lord. I don't know. You want to get accurate. Let me just something boring and business-y.
I know I was going to say, it's going to be something about like investing or something.
I don't even know how does one look up.
I think
up
you go to your history.
Googling?
Like,
okay. Maybe? I don't know.
Unless you haven't been on Google here recently. It's possible.
I have. Let's see. This is like not rapid fire.
No, it's okay.
Google.
I'll cut in between.
Just a random name of someone that reached out. Oh, nothing exciting. Nothing trying to figure exciting out. Like when someone name drops an email, like that we should know each other. I'm like, I don't even recognize your name. And
Got it.
Google. Yeah.
So you Google the name. Okay. A little stalking.
Sorry,
I like it.
Lame.
What was your last impulse purchase?
Again, I'm in the season of being super disciplined. Like, you know, I went from, you know, full-time long career making good, you know, great money, bonuses, all the incentives, all the things, to now I've been like in startup life for about 3 years. There's not a lot of impulse purchases. Oh, I guess I can. Yeah. I decided I needed to get away and I booked a trip for our family, like on Saturday night of the week of Thanksgiving. We booked it Saturday night. We left Monday morning. So that was like the most spontaneous, you know, impulsive thing I've
with
done in
kids,
a while.
Like, that's amazing. I love that you did that.
I'm like, get me the hell out of here. I need a break. But you know what was great about that? If you know me at all, that you know that if I were to pack my kid, like if I was to plan in advance and plan a vacation, I'd be like, oh, the kids need matching swimsuits. Yes. And we need like matching outfits to get family picture on the beach. But if you don't give yourself much time, you don't have time to buy a bunch of crap you don't need. So we just gathered up whatever they had in their closet. Like, come on, kids, we're going on a trip tomorrow morning. It all worked out great.
I kind of love it. It looked amazing. Your biggest pet peeve or annoyance?
I have a lot. I'm not big on making small talk. Like, I don't like socializing too much. I mean, I love a good deep one-on-one relationship, but I get tired of like going to events where you have to make small talk all the time. And the last 2 days have been a lot of that. It's like too much peopling and socializing for me.
Yep.
Like, I'm ready to just like hibernate and knock out some work on my computer after this.
Oh yeah. We're very similar with that. Very.
Yeah.
What, two more of these, what's something many people take seriously, but you don't think they should? Like things you either see on like social media, people getting riled up about, that you just like, don't sweat it.
There's so much stuff that people get worked up about that just doesn't matter, you know, and maybe that's, now I'm becoming like the old woman here, you know, at the ancient age of 45, but like, a lot of shit just doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about it. Like the comparison, the, you know, whether it's shopping, they're gossiping, like all this stuff, it's not gonna matter. Like if think about anything that's stressing you out today and think like 5 years down the road, will you still care about this? Nope. And 99% of the time the answer is probably no. And I can get in my own head too much, like, oh my gosh, if I make the wrong decision for this, and especially with kids, like I tend to overthink things. Buying a house or finding a place to live, like, oh well, this is where they're gonna spend a good chunk of their childhood, will this be good? Like, it's not going to matter. Like,
it's going to be
the day,
fine.
They want love, comfort, security, you know, a sense of, you know, hominess, warmth. Like, it's not a lot. It's the love and the feelings of it all, not exactly like what the house is like or what neighborhood.
Right.
Like, so,
it's
true. Yeah, I think we all just kind of like get our own ways and overthink things that don't need to be over.
It's like my middle name.
Done.
Like, I just, I know it is. Like, I don't even know where to begin. Okay, finally, what is something... Actually, I have two more. Sorry. I had so many and I know we're like out of time, but what's the first thing you notice about a person when you meet them?
Good question. I mean, I think it's just the general demeanor and the attitude. And I like people that are real and relatable and, you know, just, I don't like people that are overly polished or perfect. It makes me kind of wonder what's going on behind the scenes, you know, like, if you tell me that everything's perfect, I probably know that something's not.
I probably hate you.
Kidding.
But that's, I like someone who likes approachable, like just like an old person. Okay. And finally, what is something you wish you could tell your younger self, or as having a little girl, what would like one of the biggest things you want to make sure she knows for her own?
Yeah. I think for me, I fell into the trap of like perfectionism. Right. And that was my way, without getting too deep, of kind of, proving that, you know, crap that happened in my childhood, it didn't affect me. No, I'm mm-hmm. fine. Look, I graduated the top of my mm-hmm. class, a 4.0 GPA at the, you know, College of Engineering at UT. And mm-hmm. then I got the best paying job offer out of my grad, you know, and I did, you know, da da da. And then I, you know, married the perfect person and da 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 da, because it was all me kind of running from my own mm-hmm. internal issues by just performing. And right. don't get me wrong, some of that performance has served me well, you know, professionally, mm-hmm. career wise, like it's good to be, you know, good to be productive and smart oh, yeah. and intelligent and achieving and all those things to an extent. And so I'm trying to be cognizant with L, like, you know, not to, you know, praise performance, but to praise the effort that gets to the result, right?
You're
like
such a good mommy.
I don't know. I'm just learning. I'm figuring all this out. She just started kindergarten. So it's not like I'm some, you know, way down the path, but you start to see yourself and your children. Yeah. And so it's really like eye-opening to see, oh, like maybe it wasn't, you know, right that I was made to feel this pressure or that pressure, or maybe it wasn't right that I was treated that way or this way. And mm-hmm. you just want to do better and do different. I think mm-hmm. that's all we can do is, you know, do better and, you know, than the previous generation and leave our, you know, next generation better
hopefully
off than
a little
we
better.
Were and right. not needing as much therapy as we need.
Right,
you know?
Right. Stephanie. No. No, this, oh my God. Okay. Before we fully wrap, where everyone can find you, you have two different Instagram accounts, two different websites, depending.
Sure. Want. Yeah. So my personal Instagram is just at Carrie C. My one small claim to fame is that I was on Instagram the week it launched. Yeah, I'd actually just gone through a big breakup and I'd gotten off like Facebook and Twitter and all that. And then this new platform popped up and I like photos. I like pretty mm-hmm. photos. I'm like, oh, cool. A photo sharing app. And I was on it the first week. So it's just at Carrie C, C-A-R-R-I-E-C. But then we also have the Curate Capital account, which we're trying to build and grow and put out some good, helpful content. And that is at curate.capital, mm-hmm. which is also our website, curate.capital. Yep. No.com or anything like that. Just curate.capital.
Do you want people to go to carriecolbert.com? Check
they
out your
can.
Blogs.
It hasn't been updated in a couple of years, but there is some good info that's still there, much of which Julie wrote. But yeah, maybe we can get on that, like, you know, yeah, updating it.
We're
going to
bring
years.
It back. Oh, I yeah. love this conversation so much. Thank you so much for coming
Me too.
On.
Thanks, friend. You're the best. I'm so glad you're podcasting again. Oh, you are really good at it. And I enjoy listening to all the episodes. So thanks for having me again.
You're so sweet.
And there you have it. Hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as we enjoyed recording it. Be sure to follow Carrie. Be sure to check out Curate Capital. You will not be disappointed. The content she puts out is beautiful and it's informative, educational, and she's just doing so many great things, and it's really, really cool to watch it all unfold. So definitely follow her. As always, you can follow me everywhere at By Julie Lauren. Thank you so much again for being the most supportive. It means more to me than you will ever know. Happy, happy holidays. Happy New Year. I will see you in 2023, and I'll talk to you very soon. Bye-bye.